At a time when Facebook was renamed as Meta, the so-called metaverse is on everybody's lips, whereas experts are still wondering whether there is such a thing as a metaverse for consumers, and Forrester states there aren't any applications for that yet, I turn towards the famous independent analyst group to shed a bit of light on what might or might not happen in business to business. My guest today is therefore JP Gounder from Forrester, who shares his thoughts on how the metaverse could be evolving across industries and what the future has in store for B2B in that area. I found this discussion utterly enlightening. Here are JP's thoughts on the subject. Good morning, this is Jan Govinek. Welcome to the Visionary Marketing Podcast. Today's topic: what could be the potential applications for the metaverse in B2B? Here is the recording of my interview with JP Gounder from Forrester. I'm with JP Gounder from Forrester. I've asked you to spend a bit of time with us and our readers in order to find out about the kind of applications that there can be with metaverse in the B2B space. Is that something that you think is really going to happen?
So I think we need to take a step back and think about where we've been and where we're going. Mm. The short answer is yes, metaverse technologies can play a role in the workforce. We have to think about things like the pandemic and the move to distributed work. We have to think about things like the growth of hybrid work. We will have a permanently more distributed workforce than we used to. Not everyone, everywhere, but there will be a lot of people who are working remotely or working remotely from time to time. We also have to look at the past of the kind of technologies we've been using. You could argue that something like Slack is a persistent chat room. It has the qualities of a virtual world. It has places like channels. It has presence, people spending time either synchronously or asynchronously. But it's not a rich and immersive version of a virtual world. When you move up the chain a little bit, you start to think about things like Microsoft Teams and Zoom that are more visual, but that are really a flat, you know, broadcast style representation of people. So what the opportunity here is to get away from those sorts of existing paradigms and move to something that's a little bit more lifelike. Right? Where we have a group of people who can get together in a variety of contexts and be able to walk around a room, you know, in a naturalistic way, to be able to interact with each other, break off into subgroups, immerse themselves in an experience that sort of reflects what it's like to be together in the real world. And a couple reasons for this. One is that video conferences do create what has been known as Zoom fatigue. Because we are sort of on camera so much, we're looking directly in people's eyes. It actually is psychologically very taxing. Second of all, there are things you can do with these metaverse type technologies that you cannot do. Walk up to a whiteboard, walk up to another whiteboard, include people from all over the world very easily and not in the sort of static row after row of people. So what we're going to find is that there are needs that must be met by workers who are trying to collaborate. And I want to add one other reason why the B2B metaverse might be powerful. Collaboration, of course, is an important scenario, but the other area is really operational, and that is digital twins. The visualization of digital twins of operations or places or both, often both, like what BMW is doing with its factory digital twin that it created with NVIDIA, where you have this incredibly well-instrumented understanding of the entirety of the factory. People can sort of spend time understanding the digital twin in this very visual way. They can go in, they can sort of inspect different parts of that process, and they can improve it over time. So there will be this kind of private, if you will, use of metaverse technologies that is focused on the acquisition and modeling of data. And some of that also could be simulation. So a lot of companies developing driverless vehicles are using physics engines, you know, especially with NVIDIA, but maybe others, to figure out what is it going to look like in this 3D world. So I would say collaboration, digital twins, and simulation are three powerful ways B2B can use metaverse.
Okay. Are there any industries where the metaverse is going to play a more important role than others?
So I think for something like collaboration, clearly it's going to be the industries that have a lot of knowledge workers. Rather, you know, it could be financial services. It could be somebody who is working in marketing or, you know, any area where you have a lot of people who don't need to be present in person. Right. Now, that said, it can also be used in this hybrid mode. But it takes a little bit more to figure out how that works exactly. For example, you may have, you know, a conference room that is well equipped with cameras that allows you to do these sort of joint experiences between metaverse and reality. But I would say the first cut on that is, do you have a lot of knowledge workers? The second group is going to be anyone in manufacturing, engineering, anything CPG, anything with a lot of factory-oriented kinds of operations. That's going to be suitable for the digital twin. Put automotive in there as well. And the simulation might be for companies that are developing advanced products that maybe are so new, like driverless vehicles, that they require simulation. And then we'll eventually see companies that have been making traditional products move into that environment as well.
Why is everybody talking about the metaverse? Is it just because Zuckerberg is talking about it, or is it just coming back into fashion after, 15 years?
I think it's a little bit of both, right? I mean, clearly, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, has broken open that conversation. And really, by the way, in a very damaging way, because people are not very fond of Facebook because of their privacy concerns and that sort of thing. So it's getting a little too associated at the moment with Meta. However, Microsoft has been talking about this for even longer. And the work they've done with HoloLens, Microsoft Mesh, they have been talking about this. And in fact, Satya Nadella has talked about metaverse as a growth area. And clearly companies like NVIDIA, who are very focused on enterprise and particularly, again, industrial kinds of metaverse, have been talking about it too. So part of it is definitely the way the media kind of, triggers around someone like Zuckerberg. But there is there is new technology. There are new emerging kinds of things that one can do that Neal Stephenson could only dream about 30 years ago when he coined the term, or Second Life couldn't really deliver on, 15 years ago or whatever. So there's a there, but as often is the case, there's far more hype, than necessary around this.
Okay, well, time will tell. But when can we expect to see some of these applications of the metaverse for business to business, unless some of them have already been implemented? I don't know.
You know, there are little bits and pieces. So let's again look at the three different buckets. With communication technology, we only see just the very beginnings of this. And so the Meta Horizon workspace, no one is using it yet. I mean, it's really new. But what you're going to see by the end of 2022 is that Microsoft has said they are going to take their Microsoft Mesh experiences and integrate them into Teams. So that means hundreds of millions of people will be accessing slices of it, like avatars, like the ability to create a virtual room and the ability to use digital whiteboards. It will mostly be encountered in more of a 2D screen environment. But that's how games work today, right? We do lots of 3D gaming that is encountered on, a flat screen, and it's still immersive. So you're going to kind of, whether we call it, metaverse or not, Microsoft Teams is about to be a Trojan horse for some of these things.
Okay.
The more specialized things like digital twin and simulation require a lot of investment in customized environments. They require a lot of data. Those are big projects. So when BMW does it, they haven't done it except in one factory so far, right? They need to spread that out more deeply. Other automakers, others who are designing these really big factories, that's going to take a little bit of time and investment and compute power. But it'll start to happen over the next few years, because in many cases, it's clear that digital twins of this sort can create a certain amount of value to your operations. It's just, it's not something you do overnight.
Just a stupid question. These avatars, will they have legs or not? Because apparently it seems like in the metaverse, nobody has legs.
Yeah, it does seem like that, doesn't it? You know, there's a serious reason behind that too, right? Which is that rendering these things takes bandwidth, it takes computing power, it takes electricity. And if something is not sort of inherently important to the experience, then it becomes kind of optional. And so, you know, you're going to see a lot of different experimentation here. However, let's just remember that it's better, perhaps, it has a greater sense of presence than just popping into a Slack channel and typing text, right? It has a different set of things that it can do. And so therefore, we're still at the experimental design stage. And if people really decide that legs are essential, perhaps we'll see them. I'm more focused with the avatars just on the sense that you can move them around space in a more naturalistic way, A, and B, you're not always on camera, which can be very, very challenging for people. And in fact, I mean, I myself am often on camera all day and I've gotten more used to it. But for many people, it is off-putting.
Yeah. But it's true that we don't have legs as well when we're on
camera. Right, on video cameras.
Okay, that's true. And maybe we should have these metaverse with snakes rather than people. well, anyway, one of the things I noticed in the past, and I really mean the past, I mean the 1980s, for instance, with the night vision goggles in the military when I was working with them, and then in the 1990s with augmented reality, the military have always been, you know, ahead of everyone else. And is it happening with the metaverse as well, or is it just something that they're not interested in?
Well, it's a little bit hard to say, you know, obviously different militaries around the world are doing things that are not clear. I mean, the U.S. military, for example, has been working toward purchasing HoloLens devices from Microsoft. I think there might be some delay on that, and we'll see how that all turns out. But it was a publicly expressed interest to invest in HoloLens as a mechanism for use, I guess, in battle as well as for training. We do know that VR training has been very common in the military, different kinds of simulations for flight and other kinds of logistics, as well as for post-traumatic stress disorder treatment. Right. Uh-huh. So people come back with, you know, very significant PTSD and they work with a therapist and a VR environment to go back to the battlefield and to work through some of that. So we know that some of these technologies are, in fact, being used in the corporate environments more broadly. Companies like Walmart and UPS are doing significant training in virtual reality, and other companies are starting to use in the field, augmented and mixed reality to help out. For example, the German elevator maintenance and manufacturing company ThyssenKrupp is using HoloLens very extensively to be able to visualize one of thousands and thousands of different elevators that might be in need of service, visualize it before they go out in the field, understand, bring all of the things they need. Then when they get to the on-site, they can superimpose the schematic over the real world, and they've cut the time of fixing the elevator from 2 hours on-site to 20 minutes on-site, adding, of course, a little bit of prep time. So you'll find that there are these kind of, and this is all part of the metaverse as well. It's not just a collection of virtual worlds. It's actually taking that virtual experience out into the real world and continuing it on-site in various contexts. So I do think that there are some significant, you know, examples of these things already happening, but I don't think that the full metaverse exists at this point where you can sort of easily transfer from any place to any place that we, you know, that remains under construction.
But from what I hear you saying about what the ThyssenKrupp thing is doing, taking, not going into an entirely virtual world, but actually transporting an experience from one place to another, it makes perfect sense in B2B. I mean, there's no second thoughts about that. It's nothing like B2C, you know, whether people really want to spend time in a virtual world. Here, there is a business purpose,
Absolutely. And if there isn't, then don't do it in B2B. Mm. I mean, for field service technicians, this can be transformative. And by the way, you can also do, you know, remote assistance. So the person back at the headquarters, you call them up, they see what you see, they can draw on your reality, and you can solve problems faster. These sort of scenarios mean that you have fewer errors in the work, you have faster time to completion, better customer experience, higher uptime for the equipment because it gets fixed faster. And oftentimes in field service, you must send more than one person into the field to solve a problem. So the first time fix rate is very important. And if you can raise that, you can build a business case for this technology.
Okay, makes perfect sense. So now we understand where the world is going. Now, winners and losers. Who's going to be there? Who's not? We've talked about Meta. You don't seem to like Meta very much. Are they going to be part of the picture? Microsoft, certainly.
Well, it's very early to pick winners and losers here. I would say, look, I'm not saying that Meta is out of this by any stretch. They intend to spend $10 billion in R&D. They have extensive platforms that developers will build upon. It's way too early to write them off, but they bring a certain amount of baggage around their social media, you know, sort of background. Microsoft clearly has a lot of good technology, and they have a good name in enterprise, but they're not doing everything either, right? You know, some of the dynamism may sit with companies that are more on the infrastructure side, like NVIDIA. So, you know, there's going to be different layers to all of this. They're going to be kind of platforms that people build upon. There's going to be software layers and experiences that get built. Sure. And much of that work is yet to be done. We haven't even talked about Apple, Google, other gigantic companies, Amazon, all of whom could be relevant players here. But it is, again, quite, or Zoom, you know, Zoom could get into this. I mean, Slack, Salesforce via Slack. There are many players that may get into this. It's way too early to choose the winners and losers.
Yeah. And so, and going back to Meta, they also have Facebook Workplace, don't they?
Exactly, right? And they've they've been hiring lots of very talented, experienced people in B2B. So, you know, who knows what they will look like in a few years. IBM used to be a typewriter company, and look at them now. So,
okay. All right, one for the road. Isn't there a risk that we find ourselves in a kind of bubble with the amount of noise surrounding the metaverse, and that maybe, you know, in 2 weeks' time or 2 months' time, nobody talks about it anymore?
Oh, absolutely a risk. Right now, there's a lot of blowback against the term metaverse. People don't like what they see initially. This is not, however, that unusual, right? We've both been in tech for a long time. There are always these hype bubbles that happen. You know, the internet itself was considered a bubble by some, and there was a collapse of it financially in 2001. And guess what? The internet became everything. I'm not saying the metaverse will become everything, but it's not unexpected that this would be a frenzy. And what we need to get down to is, what are the real players who are doing real work that create real value? And then we will know how this goes. But, you know, I don't think it's a passing fad. And as I said, some of it will just happen without you calling it the metaverse. That's, you know, you're going to experience it if you use Microsoft Teams later this year.
Okay.
You won't call it the metaverse, but it will be the metaverse.
So we're not going through a Second Life rehash, are we?
Well, you know, I guess what we would say is, on the consumer side, because of course Second Life was largely a consumer experience, jury remains out. Forrester's working on a big report on that right now to figure out what we think on that. And there's much more risk there. But I think on this B2B side, the enterprise side, solving problems is the key, and solving them economically and in a way that workers can embrace. And I think some of that was likely to happen over the next 5 to 10 years.
Thank you very much, JP. I know your time is precious. Thank you very much for all your explanations. Everything is crystal clear now, and we know what to expect from the metaverse.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Visionary Marketing Podcast. We hope this piece has been useful to you. Don't forget to give us a good rating on whichever platform you use. And we hope to see you soon on the Visionary Marketing Podcast channel.